No argument? Static. Well, she won't pay it, and I'm the one that's going to get the screaming hissy fit. The airwaves over northern Wyoming went silent. You mind telling me why you didn't tell me your sister owned the strip club on the edge of town? Static. Didn't seem pertinent to the investigation. I thought you were working on Gerald Holman's suicide, not the case of the supposedly missing dancer, Yone Urecha. There was a pause. Static. You think there might be a connection? It was the last case he was working on. Static. You want me to lean on my sister? It might be helpful. Static. Take your time writing her up, and I'll call her on her cell phone and make up some bullshit about you being some kind of special investigator for the state. Roger that. I took a while writing the ticket by noting in great detail the conversation between us, practicing my cursive handwriting with special attention to the curlicues, dots, and assorted design factors which were being eroded by the digital age. After a few minutes, Tommy Sandberg exited her vehicle, slammed the door, and crossed in front of mine, still puffing a cigarillo as she yanked open my passenger side door. "Not in here." She stared at me, plucked the fresh one from her mouth, and made a show of dropping it from shoulder height onto the gravel. Then she stamped it out with a full twist, the cigar being what I was pretty sure she wanted to be my head. Tommy, with an eye, then climbed in my truck and closed the door behind her.
"Well, you're a big fucking deal, aren't you?"
I paused, writing her ticket. "It's on all my business cards."
"I find it hard to believe that you have business cards."
I made that part up. She glanced back at Dog, having edged away from the diminutive woman to go behind me. Say what you will about canine intelligence, he knew when he was out of his weight class, teeth or no teeth.
"This your girlfriend?"
I ignored her and got to the pointed end of the stick as I continued writing. "Yone Urecha."
"Gone."
"Where?" Absently, she pulled another cigarillo from the pocket of what looked to be a very expensive leather jacket and tapped the end on my dash.
"God, I wish I knew. That sister of hers is driving me up a wall."
She pulled a Zippo from the same pocket and started to light up. I stopped writing and looked at her. With a long sigh, she repocketed the combustibles, turned in the seat to look at me, and nodded her head toward the winking sign down the road.
"You know how many girls I go through on a yearly basis?"
I aimed the point of the flashlight pen above the ticket docket. "How many girls do you go through on a yearly basis?" She stared at me with hazel death rays.
"A shit ton."
"Define shit ton."
"Shit as in lousy, ton as in a bunch."
For absolutely no reason, I was beginning to like her. She slumped in her seat and studied the 870 Wingmaster locked to the transmission hump of my truck and then turned her attention to the barren hills a couple of hundred yards up the road.
"I mean, it ain't exactly the Folies Bergère around here. You know what I mean?"
I didn't say anything.
"We're on the circuit between Rapid City and Billings. I mean, how are you going to keep a naked girl down on the farm once she's seen those two cities of light?"
She scratched her head.
"The usual tenure is about 6 weeks or so, but she lasted longer than most. All of the summer and through the fall."
She thought about it.
"Smart kid, smart enough to not be doing this stuff, but I get him now and then. The ones that are having money problems, substance problems, personal problems."
I watched as she extended a hand toward Dog as a peace offering.
"Which one was she?"
Dog sniffed her hand and then turned and looked out the window.
"Not very friendly, is she?"
"He."
She examined Dog a little closer.
"Yon never said, and when they don't say and you can't see any evidence of the other two, it's usually personal problems."
"Who did she spend her time with?"
"Nobody. She was a loner."
I started writing again. She watched me and then spoke up.
"What the hell are you doing?"
"Every time you lie to me, I get the urge to finish writing this ticket."
"Who says I'm lying?"
"Just about everybody I've already talked to today." She fumed for a while and then threaded her fingers into her hair, and I noticed her whole scalp moved, confirming my thought that it was a wig.
She used to pal around with Thor.
The bouncer?
I think they used to run up and down the road and shit.
I stopped writing.
Any business on the side?
She huffed again and then answered,
If there was, it wasn't through me. That shit leads to trouble, so I discourage it.
She shrugged.
Which doesn't mean that it doesn't happen, but if it does, it's not on my time or my books. Look, I'm no saint, but I try to keep the girl safe. It's in my interest, you know.
She tugged at the front of the hair, straightening it not unlike the way I straightened my hat.
Sometimes they've just had enough and they move on.
This was squaring with everything everybody was saying. No contact there. No idea where she might have gone.
Nope. I still owe her $163, so if you hear from her, let me know, will you?
I thought about it as I studied the sign down the road and could see another coal train heading our way. Don't you find it funny that a person with financial troubles would light out overnight without waiting for the money owed to them?
Honey, in case you haven't noticed, I'm in a funny business.
I'm getting there. What about Gerald Holman?
Who?
I started writing again. She stretched her leg out and bumped my knee with a gold boot.
Come on, I honestly don't know who the hell you're talking about.
The sheriff's investigator who came around asking about Yona, the one who killed himself.
Oh, him, she nodded. Thor talked to him once, I guess. I wasn't there.
She studied me.
Are you thinking?
I ripped the blue warning ticket from the docket and handed it to her as the train sounded its air horns while passing through the crossing. In case you haven't noticed, I'm in a funny business, too. The bartender at the 16 Tons had never seen anybody eat one of the pickled eggs from the bar in the 3 years he'd owned the place, and neither the postmaster nor the BNSF Highline driver said they'd ever seen anybody eat one in the 30 years before that.
Slow movers, huh?
The thick-set railroad employee with a shaved head and tattoos nodded.
You could say that.
I glanced at the bartender.
What else have you got?
Frozen pizza.
I studied the off-color ivory orbs floating in the reddish liquid.
I'll go with the pizza.
He glanced over his shoulder at the illuminated Olympia clock on the wall.
Happy hour, you want a beer?
Rainier. The cheery man glanced down at Dog. The monster was lying next to my feet.
Something for your dog?
No, thank you. He just had a ham.
He extended a hand. Neil Pilano.
Walt Longmire. Nice to meet you, Neil. We shook. So you live around here?
I live over on South Douglas Highway. He glanced down at Dog. What's his name?
Dog.
Easy to remember.
The Highline driver stretched a hand out as he finished his beer.
Greg Fry.
Good to meet you, Fry.
You worked the spur into Arosa?
He adjusted his American flag do-rag.
For a while now. You want to tour the Black Diamond Mine sometime, just mention my name.
I watched as he walked out the door. The bartender searched through the coolers for my beverage of choice, and the postmaster moved down to the stool next to me.
You gave Tommy Sandberg a ticket?
A warning. Her brother seemed to think she'd bite me if I gave her a real ticket.
That or fall down out there on the road and start biting herself. She's had a rough life.
He sipped his beer and nodded.
About a half dozen marriages and counting.
The bartender sat a bottle of Rainier in front of me and lowered a plastic bowl of water down to Dog, who immediately stood and began lapping it up. The ham must have been salty. I turned back to the postmaster and took a sip of my beer. Anyone next in the lineup?
Me, I hope.
I swallowed carefully so as not to spray the beer all over the bar. You're a very lucky man.
I know. Crazy, huh?
Have you ever been married before?
A short period of time back, but I don't think either one of us took it very seriously. Like my great-grandfather used to say, nobody misses a slice off an already cut cake.
I set my beer back on a coaster that advertised Dirty Shirley's down the road and spread my fingers across the smooth wooden surface of the bar. I think Tommy might be the kind that counts her slices. He nodded as he sipped his Coors.
You could be right.
He smiled to himself
and studied my hand, looking for a ring. You married?
Widowed.
Kids?
One. A daughter in Philadelphia, getting ready to have one of her own, due at the end of the week. That's where I'm supposed to be, but instead I'm here.
He lifted his bottle.
That's the way most folks feel about a Rosa.
I lifted my own, and we toasted.
Any word on Yona?
Nothing yet.
He eyed me through his funky glasses.
Any, you know, leads? From her mail, maybe?
Leads?
He lowered his beer and looked thoughtful.
Isn't that what you guys call them, leads?
Sometimes.
I sat my Rainier back down. No, just the usual junk forwarded from her previous address in Boise. And some new stuff, but you must have noticed that. The postman shook his head, the ponytail wagging back and forth.
Nope, I just sort 'em. I don't read 'em.
I thought about it.
No personal correspondence, nothing? Kids these days, they text, tweet, or use email.
He pointed to the USPS patch on his shoulder.
That's why we're going out of business.
You'd think there would be something, though. Weeks of mail and not a single letter? Not even a postcard? A youngish woman came through the door and looked around, pausing for a moment and then walking straight to me. Careful to avoid dog, she stood a few steps away in her business suit, long wool coat, and sensible shoes.
Are you Walt Longmire?
I glanced around the almost empty bar for comic effect, a move which was lost on everybody except dog.
I am.
Can I speak with you?
Sure.
She glanced around, perhaps for her own comic effect, and jiggled her car keys.
Somewhere else?
I pointed toward the back. I just ordered a pizza.
This won't take long.
I stood and raised my voice so the bartender could hear me.
Mr. Polano, have you already put that pizza in?
A voice came back.
Just now.
Can you take it out and put it back in when I return?
His head appeared in the swinging doorway.
No problem.
Dog and I followed the woman out the door and were surprised when she kept walking toward the Arosa Elementary School across the street. At least I was surprised. The parking lot was vast enough to allow the buses to make a full circle, but right now held only a solitary blue Volvo. Beyond was a chain-link fence and a playground with equipment painted the school colors red and white. We followed her through a gate in the fence, across the playground, and entered a door in the large, older stone portion of the building, which was, it turned out, the gymnasium. She stood alongside the gleaming wooden surface of the basketball court and turned to look at me, a large canvas satchel hanging from her shoulder.
I'm Connie Holman.
The daughter, she nodded.
I know who you are.
I studied her, clocking her age at late 30s.
Have we met?
No, but I've read about you in the newspapers, magazine articles, YO file, Sheriff Walt Longmire. They talk about you like you're some inevitable form of justice.
I smiled a tight smile and threw a thumb back toward the bar. I stop for a beer and pizza every now and then. She glanced through the metal grating of the multipane window and looked out onto the playground and past.
I'm sorry, but I'm a teacher here and on the school board, and it isn't good for me to be seen hanging around in bars.
I smiled. It's okay. It's not so good for my reputation either, but I do it anyway. She volleyed a smile back.
I'm not stalking you.
I don't suppose that would be good for your reputation either.
We had an in-service here, and I talked to my mother on the phone. She said something about having hired you.
Uh-huh.
To look into my father's death?
I walked to the window, and the clicking of dog's claws on the gleaming wood as he followed me echoed as I leaned against the massive stones and looked up at the hand-forged girders. This is one heck of a building for an elementary school gymnasium. She glanced up, and I noticed she was thin and appeared to be stretched just a bit too far.
It was the old bus barn for the eastern part of the county.
The girders looked to be about 20 feet from the ground.
Not much headroom,
she shrugged.
Fortunately, that's not a problem with elementary school basketball. Not many grannies shot three-pointers.
She swung the canvas satchel and hugged it to her chest, I guess to feel a little more secure, and then walked out onto the court. I used to dance here back when I was a kid. She did a half twirl and looked back at me. I teach here now. It's actually the fifth evolution of the school. The first was an old one room that got moved back up the valley. I nodded and reached down to pet Dog's broad head. Your mother didn't actually hire me. I figured that, seeing as how she doesn't have any money. I guess I should have said, played on your good nature and foisted this situation upon you.
Well, it isn't exactly that either. She wasn't the one doing the playing or the foisting. She shook her head and turned back toward the dying illumination of the day, albeit at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, which allowed me to enjoy the picture-perfect profile, with the skin drawn tight across her face like some Degas painting.
Lucien Connolly?
I don't mind. I wasn't sure what to say next, so I just let it trail off. Her eyes stayed on the grime of the unwashed windows, and I have to admit that I wasn't prepared for her next question.
Do you think those two had a thing?
I waited a moment more before responding. I really couldn't say, and in all honesty, it isn't any of my business.
He was in the car when she broke her back.
I sighed and nodded, dropping my head to look at the shiny lacquered surface of the court, polished to within an inch of its grain. Well, that was before my time.
Mine too.
She looked up at me.
And hopefully before my father's. Look, I'm really sorry my mother or Lucien dragged you into this, but there really isn't anything to investigate.
She sighed.
My father was not a happy man, never was. And I think it was just a case of his unhappiness catching up with him.
So you think it was a suicide?
She studied me. You don't?
Actually, I do.
Well, at least we agree on something.
If you don't mind me asking, why was he so unhappy?
Are you just being nice, or do you really want to know?
I tilted my head as if in thought. It might be both. I'm kind of playing the niceness and foisting the need to know. She smiled, but then cut it short, as Dog misinterpreted and took a few steps toward her.
Is he friendly?
Overly. She reached a hand down, and I watched as she petted him, scratching behind his ears. I leaned in a little. I'm thinking that's the reason your mother contacted Lucien. Because she doesn't understand why your father did it.
My father, Gerald Holman, never broke a law in his life. I mean it, never.
She stood back up straight and folded her arms, dropping her head in thought.
Can you imagine what it's like, living with a man like that? Let alone what he had to do to live with himself?
I understand he was a little inflexible.
She walked a few steps farther onto the court and stopped, her feet naturally falling into fourth position. I wasn't allowed to speak to a boy on the phone until I was a senior in high school.
I bet you got good grades.
She turned and looked at me, Dog beside her. I'm just giving you formal notice that you don't have to do this, that it's not your problem anymore.
Giving me my walking papers?
She shook her head. I'm relieving you of the responsibility of the sad ending of a very unhappy man's life.
Are you planning on having this same conversation with Lucien Connolly?
She smiled. I was kind of hoping you'd save me from that.
I see.
Not knowing him very well, I was hoping I could just talk to you.
You've discussed this with your mother?
The smile faltered. Not at length. I thought I would speak with you first.
I folded my arms, listening to the creaking of my sheepskin jacket sounding like bark tightening. I'll tell you what.
You get her to tell either Lucian or me to drop it, and we'll call it off. She studied me, and for the first time, I noticed she had brown hair and chocolate eyes. Not sweet chocolate, but the bitter kind that bakes. Why can't you just take my word on this? Because we agreed to do this investigation with her. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it works. She has to call it off. Her eyes flared a bit, and the chocolate bubbled.
Some kind of code you sheriffs have?
I smiled back. Something like that. I'll speak with her tonight. She paused for a moment more and then walked past me to the door.
You might want to think about it. I've seen what those codes can lead to.
You want a cup of coffee?
I glanced over at the brand new urn at the bar back of the Aces and Eights. No thanks, but I wouldn't mind a beer. His fans at the Campbell County Sheriff's Office had dropped off the old sheriff, and I'd found him seated on a bar stool when I got back from Rosa. I was going to have to find something to distract him as I investigated, or every appliance on the High Plains would be in peril.
Hey, Archie!
He raised his voice to the Indian bartender who had replaced the morning Hispanic girl in an attempt to be heard over the small crowd that had filtered into the tiny bar, mostly workers from the nearby oil refineries, their companies seeking lodging wherever they could, the tang of petroleum and dirt strangely comforting. There were four of these men seated by the door who were laughing loudly at a story one of them was telling. I leaned into him.
Lucian?
He gave me the horse eye.
What?
You can't go around giving people names according to their nationality. The small young man, dark-haired, with an enormous if crooked smile, approached from the back, and the old sheriff gave him the high sign for two more before leaning into me and whispering fiercely,
"Damn it, his name really is Archie."
The bartender in question, who indeed had a name tag that said Haji, sat two more Rainiers on the bar along with a bowl of stale peanuts.
"How are you?"
He smiled an enigmatic grin and disappeared into the back as I took a sip of my beer in an attempt to wash down the nutty meal in my mouth.
"Where the hell did you go all day?"
I pointed toward the coffee maker as the bartender reappeared and studied the oil workers with a worried grimace.
"Kmart, for one."
I sipped my beer again. "Met with Richard Harvey, Gerald's replacement." He nodded.
"The pointy head from New Mexico?"
"Yep."
"Never have figured out why they called that state by that name. It ain't new and it ain't Mexico. Am I right, Haji?"
The bartender nodded and smiled again.
"What did pointy head have to say?"
"We just discussed the cases Holman was working on." He pursed his lips and readjusted his prosthetic leg on the bar stool.
"Like what?"
"A couple of missing persons. Three women from this vicinity and all in the last year." He grunted and gave the oil workers a dirty look as another outburst of braying erupted from their table.
"Hey, you assholes! Want to keep it down over there? We're trying to have a conversation."
They all looked at him, somewhat thunderstruck, and then waved him off and went back to yowling among themselves. Lucian turned back around and grumbled,
"Campbell County?"
"Gillette proper and within 10-mile radius."
"Sandy know about all this?"
"I'm assuming, since it's his detective's reports I'm working from." The door opened, and the oil workers hooted and howled even louder. I just about made up my mind to go over and badge them when I turned and saw that the biggest of the men was holding Lorea Urecha's wrist. Once again, the missing stripper's sister was holding a stack of posters and a staple gun, obviously intent on putting a fresh one up on the bar's bulletin board near the door. A large man was trying to engage her in conversation, even though she was attempting to pull away. He was kind of in shape, but carrying a lot of beer fat and wore a jacket that read Foreman. I slipped off the stool and turned, walking over to the table, catching only the tail end of the oil worker's statement, something about him, her, and a meaningful relationship of about 3 minutes.
"Let her go."
He glanced up at me.
"What?"
"I said let her go." The nearest man turned in the booth
and I now had the attention of all four. The big guy pushed the bill of his greasy welding cap back and looked at me. "Hey, pard, we're just having a little conversation. The lady and I know each other, so how about you just run along?" I glanced at the young woman, but she wouldn't make eye contact with me. I don't think the lady appreciates the attention. I let my arms drop to my sides, my face growing cool and my hands still. Let her go. It probably would have ended there, maybe with a few parting barks, but it was at that moment that Lorea dropped the photocopies, raised the staple gun, and slapped a round in the guy's forehead. I don't know how deep the thing went, but she'd put a lot of emphasis into the action, and I had a sneaking suspicion it was going to take a pair of needle-nose pliers or a quick visit to the emergency room to get the thing out of the thin layer of skin that covered his thick skull. The staple to the head had the expected response in that he let go of her wrist and grabbed his head with a roar, trying to get a fingernail underneath the staple to pry it from his face. He shouldered her as he lumbered around, and she fell backward into the wall where she bounced against the coat rack, taking it down with her. I made a move to catch her, but the three other guys started climbing over the bench seat, possibly thinking that I was the one that had damaged the foreman, who was now trying to get his hands on me but was impaired by the blood flowing into his eyes. He managed to slam an elbow down on my shoulder, and one of the others grabbed my right arm before I could get loose. Another grabbed the back of my coat and propelled all of us through the glass door onto the sidewalk, where we landed with a thump in the snow that had been piled in the handicapped spot. I pushed off, but the three of them were still attached to me as the staple guy pulled my head back and swung, glancing a fist off the crown of my ducked head and busting a few knuckles in the process. I forced one of my assailants down and then got an arm loose just enough to push one of the others back into the one of the four who seemed undecided about the whole melee. Getting my feet under me, I was half-standing when the big guy brought a knee up, sending me flailing backward into the ice-capped snow. I started to get up, but he was on me pretty quick and was winding up with his left hand in a fist when, in the echoing chamber of the concrete alcove, there was the thunderous report of a gunshot. The foreman froze, and I forced my eyes to focus. I could see the 4-inch barrel of a Smith & Wesson service revolver stuck in his left ear. He slowly raised his hands, as Lucian Connolly spoke as though holding a pistol against someone's earlobe was an everyday occurrence. "You know, you look like one of those guys that lifts weights, and I bet you are as strong as a bull ox." He leaned forward into the big man's line of vision, his grin in the half-light looking like a death's head. "I've been working out a lot lately myself, you know, getting in shape." He continued to smile. "But mostly I've been exercising this finger enough so that I can pull the couple of pounds of pressure on this trigger that'll scatter your chicken shit brains all over this parking lot."
"Do I need to set up a sheriff's substation over here at the Wrangler Motel to keep you two out of trouble?"
Sandy Sandberg looked at the two of us as though we were truants.